This is really tender and touching and really
use your girl voice.
Really good example.
A really good example of what.
I can't do it.
Maybe I should be the girl. I can probably do a better girl voice.
You are the bitch.
Heard the song Zeotrope from the anime Amnesia by the artist Nagi Yanagi. And this is episode 166 of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, where our sole mission is to make your anime addiction worse.
No, that's not it, is it? Is that the mission?
It hasn't changed.
Oh.
I am your host, Cram, and with me is guest host Cram, or co-host Cram.
No, I'm Mitsugi, actually. And
you're Mitsugi.
We're gonna change for today only.
Okay, I am Cram, and this is my co-host Mitsugi.
I hate everything.
And joining us live from America is J-Ro from Anivision.org and the Anivision podcast, and also Metanorn.net and the Metaverse podcast. So say hello, J-Ro.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
It's going quite well. It's
How's America doing?
Oh yeah, how is America?
It's okay. There's no football on TV, so people kind of don't know what to do with themselves.
Isn't that horrible?
Just
when
walking
that
around in a daze.
Yeah, like what other lesser sports are on TV to watch?
There's always golf.
Yeah.
You can find us at www.aaapodcast.com. We're on iTunes, so come subscribe if you like us. And, of course, we're on Facebook.com at facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast. And on Twitter, with the live Twitter video feed. And we are also on Ustream, live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Ustream.tv. So come search for us on there. It's a good time. So, J-Ro.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your involvement with all of these different organizations that you're with. I'm very curious.
All right. So Anivision has been around since my high school days, back in the early 2000s, when my friend and co-host XCOM started up a high school club, and then it became a website and had all these different parts to it, and then it was up and down, and at one point it kind of died, I think. And then he brought it back as a Facebook group, and I came up with the idea of starting the Anivision podcast. And then from the early teens, it's been myself, Steve, XCOM, and Amuro, just talking about anime and video games.
And just so you guys know, Chiaki and I went on the Anivision podcast episode 150 not too long ago. Was that 2 weeks ago, I think?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
And it was a good time, so if you haven't checked out that yet, go over to anivision.org and should get episode 150.
Yeah, so. And apparently because I don't do enough podcasting, Metanorn was hiring a podcast producer, and I decided, why not? So I'm also the host and producer for Metanorn's podcast, Metaverse.
Very nice. Now, Kyokai was very nice when we had her on many moons ago. Okay, Well, more questions to come, but first, we have new forum members. We have some difficult names here. Gaius Conspirator and Saraswati Spock. If Chiaki was here reading those names, she would never have gotten those.
Yes,
there's
I think that's right.
No chance at all.
I think I'm pretty sure Gaius Conspirator refers to Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, okay.
Pretty sure.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
And then Saraswati Spock, maybe Star Trek?
I have no idea.
I don't know. So, whoever they are, they're geeks.
So welcome to the forum. I hope to talk to you guys. So trivia. Trivia has changed a little bit, but the correct answer was Miyaka Yuki from Fushigi Yugi, and we had three correct answers. Cool Manio, Nelly, 1876, and Astrophysics. The theme this month is romances, because Chiaki's doing it and she's a girl. And the winner for the week was Nelly, 1876. However, we also have now started a running six-month point tally. So you each get 30 points for the question because I'm scaling the point value based on how many people get it correct. So check that out on the top page of the website. You can see the leaderboard, and after 6 months, there will be some kind of glorious prize. Since we are living in Japan, it is very easy to find such things. So, back to J-Ro. So, J-Ro, how did you originally get into podcasting? What sparked your interest?
I had started listening to podcasts in 2008. I listened to a lot of comedy podcasts, and when XCOM brought that Facebook group up, I was thinking of what we could do to get the Anavision name back out there, because we had done, like, you know, we had a music player, and we had an arcade, and we even had a torrent tracker at some point, and so what I had thought of was, you know, getting the four of us together to do a podcast and get ourselves on iTunes and all these different places. And, you know, here I am now at the AAA podcast.
Oh, we're glad to have you. So here's a very slightly more difficult question. What does Anavision offer the anime community that no other show offers? So
The motto that we have for Anavision is bringing the worlds of anime and gaming together. And my answer to this is baseless because I don't listen to too many anime or gaming podcasts, to be honest. But I think I don't think you can find that many podcasts that talk about anime and video games as avidly as we do. I was just looking at comparing our anime list between the four of us, and we have over 600 days worth of anime. And we all have different tastes in games, and we've been playing our whole lives and watching for, you know, a long period of time for anime. So there's a lot of unique opinions on both subjects, and a lot of, you know, fanboyisms and a lot of hatred sometimes. So I think that's what Anavision offers to the community.
That's a good point. When Chiaki and I went on your show, we definitely talked a lot about games and anime. So
yeah,
good point.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Yeah, and for people that, like, you know, they like one or the other, it may be a little tough because sometimes we talk heavily about games and other times heavily about anime. But if you love both, then that's for you.
I think they do kind of go hand in hand usually.
Yeah.
So, final question, very easy. What is your favorite anime?
My favorite anime would be One Piece, especially for the ongoing series. I feel like I've gotten to a point to where I love it unconditionally. Like, even with the anime being incredibly slow right now and taking like 5 minutes just to get into the actual episode, you know, it's a show that I love watching, and I love reading the manga and all the movies and stuff and all the characters and worlds. All of it is great. And as for a series that's actually reached completion, I would say Monster is really intense and suspenseful and just a fantastic series.
Those are good picks. I have to ask, have you been to Japan?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you should come over here, man, with your love of One Piece. You'd be like a pig in shit.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Oh,
like,
uh-huh, yeah.
You can't walk into a 7-Eleven without seeing that stuff.
Yeah, I would imagine just me walking around there just constantly taking pictures and going, oh my God, look at the statue and the ships and stuff. I think they had a ship there at some point.
Yeah, I believe they did. I think they're working on maybe a theme park right now, like designing a One Piece theme park.
I am not shocked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Okay, so to all the listeners, go check out anivision.org and metanorn.net so you can hear more of J-Ro. So please do that. Moving on, we have the almighty anime mailbag as we plow through the last of the submissions from a while ago. We're very behind. So, first question is very easy. I'll do them in reverse order. Emile asks, have you had the new coffee with unroasted coffee beans? They're delicious.
Not to my knowledge,
it's a very off-topic question.
It is. I love coffee, and I've heard of these. I don't think I've actually had them. I doubt that is
J-Ro?
One.
I don't even like coffee, so.
I am currently drinking cafe milk in Japan, which is, I'm sure, not what you are describing, and it's very confusing.
What was mine? Mine was Roots Aroma Impact Black.
No, it's always black.
Crystal shot.
And black, every week, black.
There's just too much information on here. Like they need to pick one title. Like, we got Roots, Aroma Impact, Black, Crystal Shot, and then some Japanese. So it means no sugar, coffee. Okay.
Well, it's just slapping,
too much information.
Slapping English words on it to make it look cool. So the second question is submitted by Kron, so you know it will be a tricky question. Hey guys, here's another question for you to ponder over. If you can take your favorite series and improve on it, how would you do it? For example, as much as I love Madoka Magica, I would love for the studio to do more to clean up the animation, especially in the distance shots. Oh, surprisingly easy question.
Aren't they kind of doing that with the movies?
I have no idea.
So I think that your wish may come true with that the Madoka thing. But I don't know. That's kind of tough. What do you think?
Well, the first thing I thought of immediately is I would love for them to properly extend the series of Berserk.
Oh, yeah.
None of this, like, five movie BS. I want to see
five stupid movies.
Whatever. I want to see the original series extended just as it was, you know, with the same production crew and staff, so it has the same look and feel. And just make it another 100 episodes, so we can actually get the story.
That's a really good one. If I had one, I would say that it's already come true. I would say take Dragon Ball Z and truncate it and make it move quicker. But they did that, and it's really, really good. So, yeah.
I would say the same for One Piece. Just have it not air every week, so that because right now with the chapters, it's almost a one-to-one conversion. It's not even quite one-to-one with the manga, and it's just painfully slow and stuff just doesn't happen every week, so no need to air every single week.
But what you're asking for is a Japan mutiny.
Yeah,
people need people need One Piece.
They have to have it. Yeah.
People need to have One Piece in their lives here. It's essential.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You should. Whenever they start putting the Shonen Jump on the stand, have you ever been at 7-Eleven when they're putting it out?
No.
Yeah, it's crazy. They just stand in 7-Eleven and read it right there. Also, when the Tonkobon come out, the collections, whenever there's a new one, I think they're up to like 68 now or something like that for One Piece. But yeah, people wait for that, and they'll sit there and read the whole thing in 7-Eleven. Don't buy it. They don't buy it. Why would you spend money on that?
Okay, so one quick announcement. We have a special episode next week. Our friend Felix Alburne will be joining us for our second annual Anime Oscars on February 17th. So don't miss that. We have polled various anime podcasts throughout the internet, and we are looking forward to announcing the winners in various categories. So come check out the Anime Oscars next week.
Have we announced the nominees?
We'll do that on the show.
Do that on, okay, right on.
So also, earlier this week, we had the pleasure of interviewing Miley Flanagan, who is the voice of Naruto Uzumaki from Naruto and Naruto Shippuden, and also an actress in Hollywood and has been in many movies. And she was very kind and took a fair amount of her day to speak with us about her role in Naruto and her career in anime. And so I would like to share with you a quick interview that we did with her. So here is Miley Flanagan earlier this week. So we're here with Miley Flanagan, actress and voice of Naruto and from the Naruto animated TV series. Good afternoon in California.
Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
We're doing quite well. It's very cold in Japan, but we're handling it.
Is it? Is it really cold there right now?
It does get cold, but not as cold as maybe the northeast of the United States. It snowed once, and the people in Japan panicked. It was like it was mass panic when there was snow.
It just feels much colder because the houses over here have no insulation. So
yeah, that sounds like the houses here in California.
Oh no!
But yeah, people. It rains here, and people panic.
Well, we always kind of get off to the same start with every interview. It's a logical place to start. So what were your goals and your influences that led you to start your career?
Wow. Well, you know, I never thought I'd be an actor, to be honest. When I went to college, I studied poli-sci and math and at Boston College. And I joined an improv troupe. And then after college, I kept going with the improv group, so that, you know, that just kind of spiraled from there. I kind of fell into acting. I always wanted to be something else, not an actor. But that being said, my influences were always, you know, like the funny people from, you know, Second City and SNL and Carol Burnett and mm-hmm. And all those folks. So and they still are, you know, they still are. So I'd say those were my influences.
So you've done a lot of work on other animated films in America, Rango and Ice Age, but Naruto seems like it's your only role in anime, and everybody knows Naruto in Japan, yeah. America, Europe. So how did you get into anime specifically, and could you see yourself doing more anime projects in the future, whether it be Naruto or something else?
I just auditioned for Naruto, and they brought me in and worked with me and then gave me the part. When I auditioned, it was just like every other audition. I just read it and did a voice for it, and then I got called back. I didn't know what it was or how big it was until after I booked it, and then I Googled Naruto, and I was like, oh my God, this thing is huge.
It's like,
and it's only gotten bigger since then. That was like 8 years ago, 7 years ago. So, as far as doing anime, I don't do other anime. It's a little hard for me to do other anime, and anime doesn't pay as well as other jobs.
I
do so much of that. You know, I've almost been the lead in a few other of those anime projects or things based on anime, and I honestly think it's such an iconic role that sometimes I may not get those parts because I'm doing Naruto. I get other parts, but and as far as if I want to do more anime, not soon. I mean, I'm not opposed to it at all. I just, you know, I'm pretty busy. So
yeah.
If I did another anime project, it would either have to be a really good one or just a quick one, which I would love to, you know, just a quick couple hours or one that paid really well.
can't blame you on the last one. I think everyone's looking for jobs like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What type of characters interest you, or what type of voice acting projects specifically? So, I mean, you said big anime or maybe a short one would be fun, but is there a type of character that you just think, oh, that character type's really fun to play?
Well, I mean, Naruto is really fun to play because he has emotions, like psychotic emotions. You know, he's like, you know, he's nuts, and then he's sad, and then it's like he's battling someone to the death, and then, you know, I mean, my God, I don't need therapy anymore because I get it all out in the booth. You know, it's like I'm crying, I'm laughing. You know,
maybe Naruto's a little bit bipolar.
I think that might be a correct analysis. just a little,
just a bit,
and certainly unmedicated. But anyway, I mean, that's a dream role, and obviously parts like his are one of my favorite parts to play because he's, you know, he's everything. You know, he's a hero, but he's also flawed. I mean, that's a perfect part, and it's funny, but it's also really, really, really dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are times that I've this is spinning off a bit from your original question, but I remember I had to do a couple scenes in the not too distant past where I had to, you know, I had to cry, and it was, you know, during some death scenes. And at one point, I must have been kind of emotional that day, but just going through it and doing it, I honestly choked up in the booth, you know? It caught me by surprise, you know, that I was actually started to kind of cry and really feeling sort of emotional. That's happened to me a few times before in on camera acting, but never in animation. So anyway, that's a great part to play. And then the other parts to play are just, I love playing bullies. There's something really fun about playing a bully. And something really fun about playing someone who's really dumb.
There's plenty of those in anime, that's for sure.
There are. And in animation in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said that going into Naruto, you didn't know much about the anime itself, but what were some of your perceptions of anime and the anime community before going into it? What kind of thoughts did you have, or did you even know anything?
I don't want to sound like an idiot, but I really didn't know much. I mean, I knew because I'd done the only other anime I've really done is I did a tiny role in Astro Boy. And for a hot second, I was almost cast as Astro Boy. I got very close, but Candy Milo got it. She's a friend of mine and she's amazing and terrific. So that was my awareness right there. And it just wasn't my thing. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about the culture of it. I didn't know how big it was and influential and all the, you know, all the stories behind it and all the wonderful different story arcs and worlds that have been created by anime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I really didn't, it's been like an eye-opening experience, you know?
So how has your perception of the, I guess that's how it's changed about anime itself, but let's maybe shift it a little bit, and how has your perception of the Japanese anime community changed since working on Naruto?
You mean the fans or the people that work on the shows?
Let's go with both.
Well, I go to conventions and I meet a lot of fans, and in general, I find them really creative and intelligent, and a lot of them are a lot of fun, you know, and you can't beat people that, you know, sew their own costumes all night and come as their favorite characters. I mean, I just think it's fun and amazing, and it's a great world, and it's a great escape for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I learn a lot about anime when I'm at conventions, because I'm either doing panels with people that are on other shows that are talking about it, or I'll turn to somebody who knows a lot more about it, like Liam O'Brien, and be like, what are they dressed as? You know?
I bet that happens a lot. There's a lot of strange things at conventions sometimes.
A lot of weird stuff, yeah. But I'm, you know, so that's what I've learned a lot about. I kind of have a really huge respect for the art form, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's really detailed storytelling, you know.
Yeah, granted, obviously, we're anime fans, but
yeah.
I definitely think there are some fantastic stories that just aren't translatable to any other medium, and that's one of the reasons why I know I love it.
Agreed. You know, and in keeping with that, I've heard rumors for a long time they're going to make a live-action Naruto movie.
Oh, my.
I know, in the United States. And I just, first of all, I know they can do it, and they'll do it well because, you know, that's what they do. But I just think, how are they going to take all of that and put it into a movie? You know,
they're gonna have to find a really hyper 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Really hyper.
Right.
And then give him some sugar and caffeine for good measure.
Yeah. And then, you know, he has to be able to be funny, but also, you know, be able to break down into tears and fight.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on our little show. It's been wonderful talking to you.
It's been a pleasure. Stay warm.
Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. You guys take care.
You too.
So Miley Flanagan was really nice, and really a pleasure to talk to someone who's very down to earth in the Hollywood movie industry. So she's also going to be a guest at the Florida Anime Experience on May 24th through the 26th. It's at the International Palms Resort in Orlando, Florida. So if you want to meet Miley Flanagan in person, you can go to FAE and see her there. Also, you can find her extended full-length interview, which includes many more insights, on iTunes. I put it up last night, so you should not have any problem finding it, and it's about 30 minutes long, so you can check that out also. So, what are we doing this episode? Let's see. We are, in honor of Valentine's Day, we are going to be doing the most complete anime romances, whatever the hell that means. You can interpret the most complete however you want. Then, we're going to take another quick news break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to do impressions on Senran Kagura, God help me, Sasami-san at Gambaranai, and Kotoda-san. And then, we're going to do a review of the Memories Trilogy. So, stay tuned, and we will be back from the news break in just 1 minute.
Hey all you anime lovers out there, this is Chiaki, and this is your Anime News Break. First up, for those of you who like to buy every single bit of cosplay or anime merchandise that comes out in the entire world, the cosplay retailer Cospa has a new product that, for those of you who are more snuggly, are gonna love. It's a hugging pillow, or a daikimakura, which has covers of Accelerator from a certain Magical Index 2. So this is a pillow for you ladies, because of course he's a man. The two sides of the pillows feature both the level 5 Esper voice in the anime by Nobuhiko Okamoto in his summer and winter attire. Ooh. The later with his walking cane. Oh my god, his walking cane. Ooh. In other news for you Space Brothers fans that are following the anime as rapidly as I am following it, the Space Brothers manga creator Chuya Koyama will make his voice acting debut in an episode that is coming soon of the television anime. Koyama will play Taro, a member of the Tissue Taro Zoo comedy duo that's going to be featured in the series. So if you're a huge fan of the series, this is a great opportunity to listen for the voice of the original creator that brought us the source material for this wonderful anime. And finally, on episode 159 of the podcast, I reviewed a requested anime, The Princess and the Pilot, and gave it a 3. If it sounds like an anime you want to watch or even own, NIS America, the American subsidiary of Nippon Ichi Software Game Company, has recently announced that it acquired The Princess and the Pilot from Studio Madhouse, the film rights for North America. This is going to be NIS's first anime film release, so I guess it's rather exciting for them. They will release the film on Blu-ray disc on May 14th, with a subtitled-only premium edition set for just about $45. Now, this premium edition set will include a 32-page hardcover art book and collectible slipcase. Video extras include Japanese commercials and theatrical previews. This was Chiaki, and this was your Anime News Break.
We watched Unico and the Island of Magic. So they go into, they enter like this endless desert to find the Sphinx. Kevin is champing at the bit looking, where's Kenshiro?
Heart of Madness.
Kenshiro's gonna clean that Lord Kuroku up.
Like that freaking Unico is gonna be like the little horn is gonna pop up. There's gonna be like a little satellite dish on the end of it. He's gonna call, you know, he's gonna like, you know, on the other side of the desert, Ken's gonna get a phone call and he's gonna be like, what? I'll be there. Turns to Barth's like, Let's go!
Hop in the buggy! Where are we going, Ken? The Island of Magic!
Come on! Someone needs to do a mashup.
The Method to Madness podcast with Sean Ryan and Kevin Gray. Find them on iTunes and alphacounter.com.
Hi there, this is Vic Mignogna, the voice of Edward Elric and Tamaki Suo and lots of fun guys. And I am... Yes. I have to admit it. I'm a total anime addict.
Welcome back. God, I love this music. I'm never gonna get tired of it. Trapeze. What an interesting show.
AAA dance party.
AAA dance party. Very nice. So, Valentine's Day is very soon. And because of that, we are going to sicken you with love.
This is like the worst possible episode for Chiaki not to be here.
I know. So you get to have love from a triple male perspective, which is probably not good.
This should just be a list of hentai, honestly. It's like, I think they really love each other, those two people who
are
raping each other.
When Chiaki's not here, the show falls apart. It's true. It's how I feel when I have to do the show alone once a year. So that's okay, Cram. You can be the girl today. Okay, so try your best.
Cramette.
Use your feminine voice. So, J-Ro, why don't you get us started?
Let's see. I'll start with the maybe one of the most popular ones, I would guess, is Aisaka Taiga and Ryuji Takasu from Toradora. And I had only watched this series about a couple years ago, but it was what originally was supposed to be those two working as a team to hook up with two other kids that they liked, Kitamura and Kushieda, ended up being, you know, we all know from the beginning, it's like they are the one true pairing. And it was just a really great series, really intense moments. And, the moment when they get together is one of the best in anime.
How far does the relationship get in that show? I haven't seen Toradora. So, I mean, is it hand-holding? Is it kissing? Is it sex? What's going on?
It's kissing, and they actually talk about running away and, like, eloping at about two episodes toward the end.
Really? That's kind of rare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then they do the annoying thing of, okay, now they're finally together, it's okay to spoil, right?
The
series is like about 5 years old.
Pretty old. You might as well it's a spoiler, so there's a spoiler coming.
I think the statute of limitations is up on that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then Aisaka Taiga transfers to another school because anime characters go out of their way to deny themselves happiness.
Oh, great. So, it's just like every other anime generally.
Yeah.
Why?
Not really
that
a spoiler then. What
Why
do you think is
that
going to happen?
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy. So, I'm all. When I hear a statement like that, all I think about is how many hot Japanese women I know right now that are completely single and all they want is to get married. Why is this so difficult?
They don't even care to who, it seems.
Oh, it's like...
The way they talk about it, they're just like, find someone who will marry me, please. Anybody.
I had a student, she was like, she's like 29, the hottest thing you've ever seen.
She's so cute.
does her hobbies yoga, right? Like, what else does a man want? Like, when she says that, like, the sky opens, rainbows fall, and angels sing with trumpets.
The hallelujah chorus.
my hobby is yoga. And she's like, I'm 29, and all I want to do is get married. I hope the next one's good, because he has to be my husband. Quote.
Why are you slamming your head into the desk?
It's like,
I don't understand.
I know about 50.
What did I say?
I know about 50 people in America that would marry you. Anyway, so moving on from that. Here's a Chiaki one, because Chiaki's not here. Chiaki believes that a very complete romance in anime is Parn and Deedlit from Record of Lodoss War. We have not mentioned that anime in a long time.
I did last week, I think. I said something about Deedlit.
Oh, did you? Maybe that's why she was thinking about it.
What did I say about Deedlit? I don't know, that she was hot. That I would marry her.
How smoking hot Deedlit
is? Yeah, duh. I kind of agree with this one. I don't know, like, their relationship doesn't get a lot of focus. In fact, going through this list, I realized that I don't really agree with most of these. I don't think that they're very complete. They exist,
well, that's why you're
certainly.
Here.
But,
that's why you're here, okay? Yeah. You can deny.
They just, I mean... Parn and Deedlet's relationship doesn't get a lot of attention at all. You get the impression that they are in a relationship, but I don't think that it gets much development. There's just too much political and fantasy action stuff going on for them to be like, and then every once in a while it's like, oh yeah, and they're kind of dating or something. I don't know. Here you go.
How do you feel about this, J-Ro? Do you have an opinion?
I have unfortunately not seen Lodoss War.
My opinion is sort of like what I recall of Lodoss War, which I watched that show half asleep in my dorm room in college, is that there's a whole lot of fighting and fantasy going on in that show, but there's not a whole lot of Parn and Deedlet, you know, going off on their own doing like love stuff. So yeah. I think it's understood.
It isn't. I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's understood, which I think doesn't make a very complete relationship. This list should actually be the relationships that should be more complete in anime. Happy Valentine's Day.
You know what? That's why you're here, to just ruin everything as the girl.
To hate?
Yeah, to hate. Yeah.
So, it's just because it's implied doesn't mean it's fleshed out, and in this case it certainly isn't. But yeah, you get that feeling that they're together. And she's super cute, and why wouldn't they be?
I am finding this cafe and milk drink to be quite delightful.
Wow. Did you take your ADHD medicine?
I did not, but in a way, coffee is ADHD medicine because it has amphetamine in it.
So. Let's talk about your relationship with that coffee.
My love for this coffee is so developed.
Moving on.
J-Ro.
Perfect encapsulation of how well this episode is going.
J-Ro, help us out here with another one here.
Yeah. Give us another one, man.
Let's see. From Mysterious Girlfriend X, I had Tsubaki Akira and Urabe Mikoto, and what starts off as one of the strangest and grossest setups to a relationship, which is
no
basically
kidding.
The guy sees some drool that Mikoto had on her desk, and he decides, I'm going to take a taste, and then suddenly goes into withdrawals when he doesn't get her drool. What ended up coming out of it was a really interesting, well-paced, pretty slow, but for this kind of show, it was good to see a slow progression of their relationship. And there was definitely a lot of physical elements of it, like, you know, him having the memory of her naked in his mind, and then I think for a while he lost it, which sounds horrible, but it was and how they ended the anime in comparison to the ongoing manga was pretty good, because it was a little conclusive to where you don't really need a sequel series, which I appreciated from the anime.
I could not get past the saliva fetish. I couldn't do it.
I watched this whole thing because I was doing it for the show, and my old man brain is having a difficult time recalling the ending because I'm old. But and by that I mean I'm 27. But
hey, I'm a year older.
I'm going to just agree with you. I don't recall it. I don't recall myself feeling that convinced by their relationship. All I remember is him eating a whole lot of spit like a puppy.
Oh,
and then.
Yeah.
And then her being extremely aggressive anytime he tries to do anything and attacks him with scissors. And then there was another chick that came in and was trying to break them up, I think, somewhat.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember anything after that.
And then there was one other girl that basically was the driving force to push everything forward. Like, she was, you know, getting all up in Mikoto's business, saying, you know, Akira's faking this and you should do this. So... I forget her name, but she was the one that was really making things go forward.
Well, some people in the chat say they like this show, so that's good, and they would like a sequel. So
I probably need to give it another shot, but I couldn't get past the saliva fetishism. It's really gross, guys. Come on, like, can we all admit that at least?
Well,
it's really gross.
Cram, knowing you, I really don't think you need to watch the show.
Okay,
you
think I wouldn't like it?
The romance aside. I gave it like a 2.5.
Oh,
so
right.
I don't really think, I don't know. Knowing you, you're not going to get like the expertly written script and everything that you look for in a show.
That I need.
Yeah. So
I have needs too, Mitsugi. You know that.
Here is a show with a really god awful script, and probably a lot of other things about it are very bad. But I find the love story in it to be pretty convincing. Unfortunately, it took 200 episodes and 4 movies, but Inuyasha and Kagome, because we never talk about Inuyasha on this show ever.
Oh, man.
And Cram groans in agony.
I can't do it. I can't do Inuyasha. I tried. I really did. I put everything I had into this when it was on Adult Swim, I guess, back in the day.
Well, how do you feel about this, J-Ro?
I'm very much like Cram, where I saw it like one episode and I just went, no, I just can't watch this.
One episode.
Here's the problem. I watched like half of the show before I was like, no, done. Just done. I can't do it anymore.
Are you serious? Half the show?
I watched like 100 episodes, yes.
I've never met anybody.
And all the movies.
All of them?
Yes. All of the movies.
I have never met anybody that has watched as much of Inuyasha as you have, Cram. Congratulations, you win.
It's partially my wife's fault because she loves the show. Still, to this day, loves the show.
Interesting. So I can make fun of her for that.
Yes, you can. Next time you see her, please do that. She'll love you for that.
It's like, you know what anime really sucks? It's called Inuyasha. No, actually, I'm the one that put this because I feel like the show is essentially about them. And even though it takes 200 episodes for them to get around to like fleshing it out completely, in the grand scope of things, it actually is what I feel like is a solid romance. You know, they do kiss. I mean, I feel like they love each other from like episode 40, and you know, then it just goes on and on. I only got to about episode 60 in the show, I think. But
I mean, I would have to disagree with that. I think that their relationship does the same thing. It goes on this loop back and forth between, oh, look, they kind of like each other. Oh, except she's going to yell at him. Oh, except they kind of like each other. Oh, she's going to yell at him. And then it does it for 200 episodes and over 5 movies. And then in the course of one movie, you get just that little extra bit where they kiss and you're like, oh, that's it. They totally like each other, don't they?
You're allowed to sit here and hate. That's your role. But
it's ridiculous. It's terrible writing. Terrible.
It's terrible writing, but it's Rumiko Takahashi, and everything she does is like 600 episodes, and because everything she makes ends up making a ton of money.
I like my Sonikoku though.
Whatever. So basically, the only reason I put this is because if you say to me, "What is an anime romance?" One of the shows I think about is Inuyasha. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it.
I guess you have to think about it, even though it's terrible.
I don't hate it that much. Anyway, J-Ro.
Let's see. Kimi ni Todoke, the Sawako and Kazuhaya, the two main characters of that series. It's, you know, in the first, I like the first season overall better than the second season. The second season is where things finally come together, but watching the second season of the series kind of felt like way long and way annoying and just incredibly slow, but yeah, I think they're a really good couple. They I wish I could say that without lying through my teeth.
Chiaki would disagree with you a lot. I know she added this one. And
isn't this the show? Like, I haven't seen it. Isn't this the show where they kiss in like the first two episodes?
No, wrong one. No, not at all.
Opposite.
This is the show where they don't kiss until like the 50th episode.
Oh,
if I'm not mistaken.
So like every other anime. All right,
I think
holding hands is as naughty as it gets, I believe.
That's Japan for you.
Yeah.
So if they even get that far, but like no, this is the show I recall Chiaki saying at the end of the first season they go into kiss and then rather than giving it to you and just letting you have it, they pan the camera up and make you look at the sky instead. So they, mm-hmm. like, dangle it there, and then they take it from you. And make you wait the whole second season to see it, which is so anime. Such a...
Yeah, it is.
Whatever you want to call it, a trope or something. It's just such a cliche to do that, but... I don't know. Everyone likes Kimi ni Todoke, and Chiaki's a good example. Right, right, Chiaki?
Yeah. What's that?
That's my girl voice. Maybe The more we get into this and the more we talk about these shows where it takes like 50 episodes, 100 episodes, 200 episodes and 4 movies for people to kiss, like, and like J-Ro said, holding hands is about as naughty as it gets. You know, the fact that that's naughty at all is really, really telling, I think, culturally about Japan. You said something about that just a couple minutes ago.
Yes, I agree.
You know, dear world, if you want to see the picture of sexual repression, just watch anime and just watch it.
Just come to Japan.
Yeah, come to Japan. Well, I mean, if you don't have the money to come to Japan, just watch some pirated anime.
Yeah.
Not that we support that, but and you'll see. It would make a really interesting case study.
There is an anime that I neglected to add to this list that Nagy Mudkip in the chat thankfully reminded me, because it is, I would argue that it's one of the most complete love stories, and that is Nagisa and Tomoya from Clannad. There is no way I can get around it. I don't know if either of you have seen Clannad.
Nope.
If
it's on the list, yeah. The huge list.
This anime is very good. I don't know what else to say about it. It's I can't explain to you how good it is without you just seeing it, because it just carries a lot of power. But I mean, not only do they love each other, but they get married and they have a kid. And there is a lot of sad things that happen in this show that just show you how much they love each other. And there is no way that anybody could say that this love story is not complete, because it's basically what makes the whole second season of the show work. And I mean, the fact that there's a child and she's growing, and like, she's just pretty much the symbol of the love that they had. I'll try not to spoil too much of the show, because I think that this is the kind of show where the spoilers really, really kill the show. So. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna hold off, but
I don't mind spoilers so much, but I understand.
Everybody else seems to.
Yeah.
So I definitely think everybody should watch Clannad, and the first season's a little bit harem school type crap, but the second season is definitely why you're watching Clannad at all. So it's kinda like Higurashi in that way. So check that out for sure.
Gonna have to. This next one on the list, I really would have to agree with. Shizuku Tsukishima, is that right? Tsukishima and Seiji Amasawa from Whisper of the Heart, or Mimi wo Sumaseba.
Yeah. Oh boy.
This is really tender and touching, and like really,
use your
really,
girl voice.
Really good example. A really good example of what? I can't do it.
Maybe I should be the girl. I can probably do a better girl voice.
You are the bitch.
We should. You know what? You know what I should have done. I should have just recorded a bunch of drops from Chiaki making, like, comments, and then I could just have, like, the Chiaki soundboard here, and I could just push buttons. Oh my god, I love it when they kiss!
Squee!
Squee!
I agree! I think you're wrong.
Mitsuki, shut up!
But anyway, I think that this is a really good example, or a really good depiction of kind of young love, and what that can be, and I think that's what anime does a little bit too much of, and it's rarely heartfelt, it's rarely as touching and as genuine as it feels in Whisper of the Heart, and I think this is one case where you don't feel really frustrated watching them have a relationship that should have developed way faster, or develops in a completely unrealistic way, and I think that there's I think it's a very, very positive depiction of what some may call puppy love.
This is such a sad movie because no one has seen it. And it's because...
Is that why it's sad?
Yes, exactly. Because it's not done by... It's not directed by Miyazaki, and so no one watched it. It's the same thing as... It's the same with all of Takahata's films. People don't even realize that Takahata's a Ghibli director. I mean, who... If I say to you...
He's the depressing one. He's the one that makes movies that make you cry.
But it's not that... It's understandable. If I said to you, who is Yoshifumi Kondo? Even I would be like, I don't know. Who is it?
Let me think about it for a second. Yeah.
Well, he's the guy that directed Whisper of the Heart. Granted, Miyazaki did the screenplay and the storyboard, which is, you know, a big portion of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the producer. But people don't realize that. They just look for the director. But this romance gets as far as, I think at the end, they promise that they will get married to each other. So they're basically engaged at the end.
But they're still pretty young, like in the... Are they first year
junior
high
school
students?
Junior
high school. Okay.
It's a young girl in junior high school is how it's described. Mm. So that puts her at about 14.
Yeah. Well, maybe even younger too.
Maybe younger.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I think that's a really good pick.
This is the one where on the last the last Valentine's episode. It was absolutely, I lost the argument somehow, but Howl's Moving Castle is a better love than Whisper of the Heart. I'm not really sure how.
You agree with that?
No, I don't agree.
Who said that? Because I'm going to find that person and beat them.
Well, Chiaki will be back in a few hours.
Okay.
And then you can go to...
Chiaki's getting the beating.
And then you can go to America and find Kimiko, who does still exist. She is just doing Kimiko things.
But if they're talking about their relationship in the book, maybe they're
no,
right.
No.
Okay, well then someone's getting a beating.
Beat down.
Let's move on from the violence.
So I haven't pulled one from you for a while, Cram, so, or Chiaki, so.
Oh, sure. Let's see, what's excuse me, that's something in my throat. The next one is Yukino Miyazaki and Soichiro Arima from Karekano, or His and Her Circumstances. And I have to agree with this wholeheartedly.
You seem to agree with a lot of mine.
Was this one yours?
Let's see.
Did you put this on here?
I did. Of course I did.
Brothers.
Once in a while I bring up this show.
So, in this show, basically, we see a different kind of relationship and see how this relationship gets fleshed out pretty early on, and it becomes a rich, fully developed relationship pretty early in the show, and the way that they make you care about their relationship or you see how it develops further is them overcoming obstacles, basically, and how people who really love each other fight for a relationship if they feel like it's worth it. And I think that's, you know, one school of thought in romance narrative. The other being, you know, a romance that starts from the very beginning and goes to the end, and you're like, oh, wow, you know, that was they went from this point to this point, and now they're in love, and they're theoretically going to live happily ever after. But instead, this comes from the second school of thought where, you know, people have a relationship, maybe pre-existing, or they set it up really quickly, and they have to fight for it through different circumstances, and I think that it does a really, really good job of doing that. You really get a feel for these characters and where they're both coming from and both of their
absolutely.
Thought processes and things like that.
This show...
It's really good.
I've never seen a show that does as good of a job of letting you feel the thoughts and the emotions of the two characters.
It's very rare.
It's like, even after one episode, you feel like you've known... you know, the characters for two seasons. You know, they accomplished that so fast. And the fact that you feel what's like inside of them, it makes the romance feel more realistic and more fleshed out. And they're also kissing by like episode 4,
yeah.
Which is really fresh and
rare.
They're like,
that's also rare.
I'm never going to forget that episode where like the love has percolated to the point where they hate each other, but they also love each other. So, you know, she runs away and in the schoolhouse, and he's chasing her, and she jumps through the window, and he jumps through the window after her, and he basically grabs her, and she falls and like hurts herself, and she just gets up, and she's having like this love rage moment where she just goes off on him, but in the end, but she's crying, and in the end, you know, it's because she loves him and all this stuff. It's wow, and that's episode 3, I think.
Yeah, it's legit.
It's a shame that this show kind of sucks at the end.
Wow.
You know, when you get past the 4 recap episodes and the crayon and the... But that's Gainax, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I like to do that.
See, so what's next?
Well, I have School Days.
you
thoughts?
This one. No, nothing.
Nice boat.
So I think that in anime, it really takes a lot to demonstrate how much you love somebody. And if you're willing to cut open the stomach of another girl just to prove that she doesn't have a baby, only for the sole purpose of furthering your ability to be with a man, that is love. That is powerful. And I guess she's not pregnant.
Nothing. I got nothing.
And what a beautiful sunset at the end. It was so romantic.
Oh, my God.
Her and his head.
School Days just came up on a couple episodes ago where we were talking about the craziest bitches in anime, and that's the exact scene. The exact scene we talked about then, and now we're using that same scene to talk about what a wonderful relationship they have.
For those of you that don't know, this is an anime where at the end, the one girl's psychotic, and she loves him so much that she wants to make sure that he can never be with anybody again, so she saws his head off and runs away into the sunset with it. Literally, that happens. Wow.
Spoilers.
Spoilers, but I mean, everybody knows. You just have to see the show to believe it because it's so outlandish. So
we got to get away from this one real quick.
Okay, so
J-Ro, do you want to do one?
Let me see. I can add one that we don't have, which is a series that just finished airing last season, which is Sukite Inayo, or Say I Love You, the romance between Mei and Yamato. It still has kind of the same awkwardness of a series where you're waiting for the people to finally kiss, to finally date, but they are actually an item, like confirmed as an item early on in the series. And that's one thing that really drew me toward the series, is actually watching a couple date instead of just go, you know, the BS of, you know, things getting in the way. It's like, you know, dealing with being in a relationship, and that's what I really enjoyed about that series. The last episode is very laughably bad in how cliched and awful the situation that they create is, but first 12 episodes of it are quite good.
I didn't watch that show, but and I didn't really hear that much about it either. So
that was a Roku show.
Would you?
It slipped into the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast abyss.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend that we watch it? Is it worth my time?
Yeah, I would say it's worth your time. And the studio that does it, Zex, that is really outside of what I'm accustomed to with their anime. They usually do a lot of very crappy, poorly colored animated fantasy type shows, so to do a shoujo show is really unique for them, and turned out pretty okay.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for that. The next one on the list we have is Kenshin and Kaoru / Tome from Rurouni Kenshin and Samurai X OAV.
Oh my god.
I want to say that Kenshin and Tome's relationship, that's the one I'm going with. I don't really care about Kenshin and Kaoru at all. Don't care. I think that his relationship in the OAV is so, so tragic and so sad, and you completely get a feeling, a complete understanding of why he becomes the person he becomes in the inferior anime series. And that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, but at the end of the Samurai X OVA, Kenshin dies in Kaoru's arms, and she's like sobbing. I mean, it's...
Oh, you're talking about the second part, Reflection.
Well, I'm including that.
Oh, okay.
I include Samurai X and Rurouni Kenshin in the same pool because they're the same story.
Oh, okay.
You know, so...
Right, I thought you were just talking about Trust and Betrayal at the... Oh, no, I guess it does say just OAV. Never mind.
So, I mean...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the anime... The Rurouni Kenshin anime doesn't really... Well...
I mean, I think that you get more from their relationship in the Reflection OAV than you ever do in the series.
That's probably true. I mean, there's a lot of... you kind of have to infer a lot from Kaoru and Kenshin, because by the end of Samurai X, they're at the point where they're, like, holding hands on the beach, which is the last thing you see in the show.
Yeah.
If for those of you that suffered through that and the mess of the last 30 episodes to get to that.
Mm.
But then there's, like, a huge gap, and the next thing in the story is his death, so... And they're very close in that OVA, so there's a lot to infer in the middle. So, otherwise, I agree.
Yeah, I think of the two relationships, obviously my favorite is his with Tome in the Trust and Betrayal OAV, because it's just so sad. And it not only is it a great example of what a relationship, like what you can do by just showing the emotions of characters who have a pre-established relationship. It's like, this is how much he loves her, this is how much she loves him, and this is how much it affects him when she's no longer in the picture. Spoilers. And I think it's really, really special, actually. Really kind of wonderful.
Let me step in and just do a Chiaki one real quick. So. Sure. Her opinion is felt, is, and that is Takaki Tono and Akari Shinohara from 5 Centimeters Per Second, which is, oh my god, I experienced just a minute of that anime yesterday, and again, I was just blown away by it. It's always going to be one of the best animes ever. So are you agreeing or disagreeing?
That's all right.
It's all right?
That's all right.
Dude, I don't even know you. So,
clearly.
Chiaki says, another example of how a romance doesn't have to end in a shower of rose petals and rainbows to be epic. This romance is made epic through Takaki's endless devotion to Akari. Throughout the course of his movie, his life, he spends every moment thinking of her, dreaming of her, wanting to be with her. Even into adulthood, his heart belongs only to her, even though she's long since moved on, making his love for her one of the most epic out there. So for those of you that know, haven't seen the movie, there's that scene at the end where he sees her, and they're on opposite ends of the train tracks, and the trains go past, and you're standing there as the viewer waiting for, like, to see if she's still there or not, and it's a very tense 35 seconds, and then I won't say if she's there or not, but wow. Are you being serious? You think this is just so-so?
It's so-so. Oh. And it's beautiful. No, it's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's beautiful. The biggest problem that I have with it is probably cultural. And the biggest cultural problem I have with it is that if his love for her is so epic, why doesn't he just go and be with her? Like, stop being so Japanese. Can we say that? Is that okay? Stop being so Japanese and staying where you are because I have to go to school and I have to do all the things that make me a normal member of society. No, F that. Go find her if you love her so much.
But it's as good as they can do while keeping the anime realistic to what Japan is like. I mean,
it's so frustrating, man. And it's so soaked in nostalgia. Like, oh, when I was a child, well, and the petals were falling with the snow.
Would you prefer another romance, which I have is Voices of a Distant Star,
which is
completely unrealistic?
No, I would absolutely prefer that because they do something interesting with that, and there is actually a developing relationship there. There is no developing relationship in 5 centimeters per second. None whatsoever. It's just his internal thought process, thinking about what it could have been, what they could be doing if he was with her, what she's doing right now. I wish I could see her. I miss her. I bet she's waiting for me. Maybe she's not. Is that her? I don't know. End.
This is a bad argument to have 2 minutes before the topic ends. Do you have an opinion, J-Ro?
I remember coming, watching this like when it had first come out, and I had had the same opinion as Cram did. And much like Mitsuki, the other guys kind of blasted me on like, how could you not like this? This is really good. And a beautiful movie, no doubt about it. But the romance stuff, I kind of agree with Cram. It's kind of precious.
My opinion on it is that it's a love that kind of develops mentally. It's something of along the lines of you don't really realize how much you need someone and how much you love somebody until they're not there anymore. And at the end of the show, I think the nice sentiment is that she's clearly moved on because she already has a husband, but she's standing there, and she turns around, and she looks at him, and she knows it's him, and she's still in love with him, and you can tell that by her expression. But when the trains go away, she's gone, because it's Japan, and she has another life and another husband whom, you know, maybe she doesn't prefer to be with, but because this is a real story, and you're not just gonna abandon your husband and child because of some selfish love you have. So the love is there, but you know you can't be. You can't do that.
I think it's totally one-sided. I think that you get so little of her development through the years that you can't call it a relationship. They don't have a relationship. That's the problem. Like that is the conflict of the entire thing is that there is no relationship where he wants there to be one.
I understand what you're saying. I think that the theme of that movie was distance.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but like if you take a classic narrative structure and you say there's a protagonist and an antagonist, and the antagonist brings on the conflict, and in this case, the antagonist is the conflict, and that is the situation in and of itself, that is the lack of the relationship where he wants one, the protagonist's job is to face this conflict in one way or another, whether or not it's coming to terms with it, or whether or not it's doing something about it, and he doesn't do any of that. It just kind of happens, and then it's over.
Did you have one more thing to say, J-Ro, and before we have to go to a news break?
No.
Okay. Should we blitz through some of these that we didn't get to cover?
Why don't you just read them off real quick? You got 30 seconds.
Okay, we've got Armitage and Ross from Armitage III, Chi and Hideki from Chobits. Let's see. We wanted to talk a little bit more about Nobuo Tadao and Mikako Nagamine from Voices of a Distant Star. Holo and Lawrence from Spice and Wolf. Nana and Takumi from Nana, Lafiel and Jinto from Crest of the Stars. I think that was pretty much it. So sorry we didn't get to talk about a lot of those, but I kind of went on a rage.
Okay, so we're going to take a news break, and we'll be back with impressions from the new season, so stay tuned.
Fans out there writing your anime Valentine's Day cards. This is Chiaki, and this is your anime news break. First up, for those of you who were Rokubu fans, the second season of Rokubu SS, very, very creative, has been scheduled to air this summer in Japan, which means one of us will get stuck with watching the second season, more than likely. More information is going to be announced at the Denki Bunko Spring Festival on March 17th. And coinciding with the release of Rokubu SS, the franchise's second PSP game, Rokubu Himitsu no Otoshimono, is in development at Kadokawa Games and is also scheduled to be on sale on June 20th at the price of just over 6,000 yen, which is about $65 US, if you may be looking to import the game. There will also be, of course, a special edition set coming out at just over Amon, or 10,000 yen, which is around $110 US. In other news, the Idolmaster franchise has decided to build on its success of a previous Idolmaster museum that opened at Namco's arcade branch in Nihonbashi, Osaka, by opening three more Idolmaster museums in locations across Japan. The two additional exhibits based on the popular Idolmaster video game series have opened at the Namco arcade locations in Nakano, Tokyo and Hakata, Fukuoka. The Idolmaster Museum events feature chances to win exclusive Idolmaster merchandise, an exhibit featuring art from the game, limited edition products for sale, and a photo spot that changes each month to match the different Idolmaster characters' birthdays. Also, to celebrate the start of the event, you know there's going to be some special promotion, a singing contest known as the Idolmaster Music Festa will be held until March 31st. So if you're in Japan and love Idolmaster, this will be a great opportunity. In some other news, Namco Bandai Games have begun streaming a third 5-minute promotional video for Sword Art Online Infinity Moment game for the PSP. For the game, original novelist Reiki Kawahata supervised a brand new original story that begins from the 75th floor of the floating Arknid Labyrinth. So if you're a huge fan of the anime series or the original light novel, it's going to be new content straight from the creator in game form. So it sounds perfect addition for the franchise. And finally, last week we spoke about anime video games and Professor Layton, so it's only fitting to mention that game developer Level 5 has posted a video on its official YouTube channel that previews an Ice Lake puzzle for its upcoming game, Layton Kyojo to Chubunmei, Ae no Isan, or Professor Layton and the Legacy of the Super Civilization A. This video shows the player trying several incorrect answers before showing the solution to the puzzle, so if you end up getting the game, you can watch it to find out the correct solution. It also advertises that the game will have over 500 new puzzles for you fans of the solving franchise. So this was Chiaki, and this was your anime news break. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back to the show soon.
Hey, this is Miley Flanagan, the voice of Naruto Uzumaki, and I am an anime addict. Use your Rasengan!
And we're back with impressions from the current anime season. So, today we are doing Senran Kagura, Sasami-san at Gambaranai, and Kotoura-san. So, as we continue our trip through the current anime season, winter 2012, I am going to do Senran Kagura, which is a show that I'm not really sure why I put on my list. I think it was just because I felt like watching something perverted. But then, you know, after I watch a couple episodes of it, I always wonder, why in the name of God did I put this on my list? And that's exactly how I feel about Senran Kagura. So, this is a show that is about ninjas. It's based off of a game for PSP, I think, where in the game, when you hit someone, when the girls take damage, all the pieces of their clothes burst off. And in this anime, you have a series of girls whose names I don't remember because I don't recall them ever saying them, really. And they do a lot of fighting against these, like, dark ninjas. So you have, like, the light ninjas versus the dark ninjas. And the fighting is pretty much mediocre, and in the most cases is just used to, in some shape or form, make the clothes burst off of another girl. Mm-hmm. And then when they're not fighting, they're grabbing each other's breasts, eating ehomaki, which people just did in Japan, by the way, for Setsubun.
That's right.
And crap, I don't know, making stupid jokes and having training from, like, really old people. So
stuff happens and we don't care.
So basically,
yeah, they really do like the sushi roll joke that it looks like she's holding a cock in her mouth.
not that the general population of Japan would know because of mosaic. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I don't even know what they look like.
It's like you look down at your own penis, you're using the restroom, you're like, whoa! I thought there was mosaic on
what
that.
What is that?
What is that thing? So, the only way I can really do this impression at all, and just to wrap it up already, is that here are the shows that if you enjoyed, you probably will like Sengan Kaguya. I would say Queen's Blade is probably a good candidate. God. Does anybody else think of something where there's lots? Oh, Ikitosen. If you like Ikitosen, yeah. this is you.
Just ecchi shows.
Yeah. But, and the guy that directed Ikitosen also did this, is also doing this series.
Thank you for that. So, but the moral of the story in the end of the day is that this anime doesn't even have the action that Ikitosen has. So if you liked Ikitosen for both the action and the breasts, you're only going to get one of those from the show because there's not much, the action is not very good. So, overall, if you like those other shows, I recommend you could probably watch this one. But if you didn't like those shows, then you might want to stay away. Another one would be the High School DxD, I think. There's a lot of perversion in that show also. So if you like the perverted shows, jump on this one. But otherwise, stay as far away from it as you possibly can because it's everywhere in the show and you can't get around it. Yeah. So that's Senran Kagura, the ninja show from the recent season. So, any brave volunteers?
I'll go. All right. So today's impression is of a show called Sasami-san Gambaranai. I don't know if you're supposed to pronounce the at symbol or not. In Japan, the at symbol is called a sign. So maybe it's Sasami-san a sign Gambaranai. I don't think so. I think it's probably just Sasami-san Gambaranai. But anyway, this show is about a girl named Sasami Tsukuyomi, and she's a high school student shut-in, or a hikikomori, who often stays at home and is doted upon by her older brother, Kamiyomi. However, due to unknowingly possessing a god's power, Kamiyomi's habit of trying to appease Sasami often puts the world into chaos, while the three Yagami sisters try to put a stop to it. So her older brother is a university teacher, and the Yagami sisters are some of his students. And, this show is kind of crazy, like, in a good way, maybe? We'll see where it goes, but the plot so far has kind of been all over the place. They haven't really delved into hikikomori or being a shut-in or any of those themes very deeply. They're not really covering that. In fact, I'm four episodes in now and she's already, like, out of the house and doing stuff, so it's obvious that's not the angle that they're taking on this. But she is kind of the hikikomori otaku, if you will. She's got figures in her house and she plays online games and she likes anime and stuff like that, and manga and whatnot.
Because if you watch anime, you're definitely a hikikomori,
definitely,
for sure.
Yeah, you definitely never leave your house. You're probably in your parents' basement. But the plot so far is, I like it. It's interesting. Basically, in the first few episodes, we understand that Sasami contains the spirit or the soul or the power of Amaterasu, which is like the god of all gods, like the number one most powerful god. And whenever she has...
It's a sun god. Yes. Shintoism.
So she has whenever she has like a desire or something, or she wants something... maybe subconsciously even, the myriad gods, which are the gods of everything else, like the gods of rocks and trees and everything else, they change the world to make her subconscious desires come true, basically. And in the first episode, we see this happen when the entire world turns into chocolate.
Is that at all? Whoa! Is that at all like? Is this at all like? How do you use a Mia? I'm just gonna make things happen because I want them to. In my mind.
That is the comparison that I've heard a lot of.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Okay.
So yeah, kind of like that.
Doesn't look quite as polished as Haruhi Suzumiya, from what I'm seeing.
Far from it.
So we actually go through and find that she has this power because she was trained to hold this power at a shrine. Like her family, her extended family, and everything lives at a shrine, and they trained her from a young age to hold this power and keep it. And her older brother is kind of her caretaker, and he's supposed to take care of her so that she, you know, has whatever she wants, so that she never actually has a desire, so the world can't be thrown into chaos. And her brother never shows his face, which I feel they're trying to say something about identity. Like there's a theme of maybe some kind of identity crisis or a loss of identity in this situation. But he has so much of a personality and they don't seem to be going where with it. So everything that I guess they're trying to do with the show, it doesn't seem like they're actually doing anything with, which is not, I don't think, very interesting to me when that happens. The characters are fairly well fleshed out. I like the Yagami sisters because they're just so nuts. We also discover that they are gods. One of them has like machinery that comes out of her body that like jetpacks and guns and things. She has big like gun boobs.
Sounds like Cosmos.
It's kind of crazy. It is kind of like Cosmos. Yeah.
Probably not as sexy.
No, not at all. The writing is okay so far. I mean, it's pretty good. I would say that where this show really shines, and you guys just said that it doesn't look as polished as Haruhi, but
well,
I think this
a few things do.
I think this show is beautiful.
Or did.
Like, I think this show is absolutely gorgeous. Like, the pastels that they use and kind of the soft focus that they give everything is really, really super interesting looking and has this kind of feel that that you don't see a lot in TV shows that like with a TV budget, anime with a TV budget.
Why is the Gambaranai?
Gambaranai.
Why is when what I translate is something along the lines of not doing your best?
Yeah.
Basically. Why is that in the title?
I've seen unmotivated.
Yeah.
As the proper translation.
Yeah. Something's on unmotivated.
So why is she unmotivated? Do you know yet?
Well, I mean, I think that comes from her being a shut-in, but she's unmotivated because I think she ran away from the shrine with her brother. Like, she didn't want to hold the power of Amaterasu, and so she ran away and became a shut-in. Her brother came with her, and he's still taking care of her, like, so much so that he takes baths with her and gives her baths and
feeds
her and puts
on
her pajamas.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a theme of incest that runs through the show, too, because the only way that you can pass the power of Amaterasu down is through incest. So there's that.
Great.
But it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Again, it just seems like the brother just wants to have sex with his sister.
High five, you got the incest anime.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job.
But it's really pretty, and the music is awesome. I love the music, too. It's, you know, there was an episode where they were playing online games, and the whole episode had, like, 8-bit style music or a kind of harking back to that era of video game music.
Okay, so who do you recommend it to?
I recommend it to... Oh, people who like weird shows. I don't know, if you want something that's a little bit, I mean, it's very, very anime, if you know what I mean. Like,
it looks,
very much so.
It looks very hyper.
It is a little bit hyper. I don't know, I think, I'm actually kind of enjoying it so far. It's entertaining, it's definitely not boring. I don't like everything that they're doing with it, but...
It does not look like a Mitsugi anime, but...
I don't know, I would recommend it to anybody who knows what anime is. I wouldn't recommend it to new fans, but... Yeah, just give it a shot. Watch the first few episodes, see if you like it. It's kind of caught me, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, J-Row.
All right, I have impressions for Kotura-san, which is a 12-episode anime being animated, produced by AIC, and this is a romantic comedy series about Kotura-san, who is, at the very beginning of the series, you see her as a young girl, and she has the ability to hear what people are saying in their mind. And they show a lot of different examples at the beginning, like girls, you know, she talks about their crushes or something like that. And what you see in the first half of the show is a really dark downfall of her and her family. At the very beginning, you see them, they're happy, they're having breakfast, and then the next, you know, the dad and mom are cheating on each other with other people, and the mom turns into a drunk, and she pushes her kid and you know, swears her off, disowns her. And so in the beginning of the second half, Katara is basically at school now, and she's very jaded about being around other people that, you know, they try to talk to her, but she's just saying what she can hear in their head, and, you know, she's far from popular. But there's a guy named Manabe Yoshihisa who is sort of the one beacon of hope for her. Like, he's a very nice guy. He's a very he's a guy that has a lot of dirty thoughts in his head, and he somehow is able to use that to his advantage to sort of lure her back in, because he's thinking about her, you know, in bed naked and stuff like that.
Are you serious?
And, yeah.
She's like, she looks like she's six. This is the girl I think you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think she is about six or so in the beginning, but they sort of fast forward a little later to about 15 years old. And
that makes it a little bit better.
Yeah, and then after that, it kind of settles in as the more romantic comedy series. And when you see, like, two first halves that are so different from each other, I was kind of like, wow, this really caught me off guard. So, but I want to see what happens once it really starts to get into its groove, which is what I'm expecting to be a rom-com series. And they have a lot of fun, and they still keep that sort of drama in there. It doesn't get too heavy, but you see that there are potential moments to where it can get really bad again, like the first 10 minutes. And it, you know, there's a great voice cast, and, you know, Jun Fukuyama doing the main character, which is great. And I would definitely recommend this to people that like the rom-com series that have a lot of comedy, but also a lot of drama.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks very. It looks like one of those shows to me that has an interesting blend of, at least in the first episode, childish character designs that have extremely mature themes on top of it. So I kind of wonder, you know, who is this meant for? Because clearly, and in the end, it's adults, because themes are a lot harder to understand than the animation style. So, So, okay, thank you. We covered another impression. Wonderful. So, those are our impressions for today, and of course we have a review for you. We are going to do a requested review. I will see who requested it quickly, but it's Magnetic Rose, which is an anime the Memories Trilogy, which is a show that came out, in the late 1990s?
I think early 2000s. I want to say that.
Memories Trilogy, vintage 1995. Overall directed by Katsuhiro Otomo. But
I didn't realize it was that old. Oh my goodness.
It holds up pretty well, I'll tell you that right now. So in the chat, I'm showing you Magnetic Rose because it's by far the best of the three stories.
Can we just not talk about the other two? Let's talk about Magnetic Rose.
Let's talk about the other two quickly. I think we should. Okay. We have about 14 minutes to do this. Okay. And just looking at... Just so there's three. Have we all seen this?
J-Ro, have you seen this?
I have not seen it. I didn't even know it existed until just now.
Ah, okay.
Okay, well then you can sort of play the role of the prospective viewer, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is good. Yeah. And so there's three stories in Magnetic Rose. You have Stink Bomb, Cannon Fodder, and I keep saying in Magnetic Rose, but the trilogy is called Memories. And that's what we're reviewing. So, Stink Bomb, Magnetic Rose, and Cannon Fodder. And Cannon Fodder is this... How would you even describe it? It's really bizarre. It's like this strange, futuristic, stylized story. By the way...
It's kind of dystopic. You know, obviously the kid lives in a walled city.
With cannons.
Yeah, covered with cannons.
And by the way, this review was requested by Yupa.
Let's see. So basically, Wikipedia's
synopsis of this. In a walled city perpetually at war, everyone's livelihood depends on maintaining and firing the enormous cannons that make up most of the city. Nearly every building in the city is equipped with a cannon of varying size, able to fire huge artillery shells over the city walls. The story is centered on a young boy and his father, who works as a lowly cannon loader. So it kind of goes from there.
I have a very non-special impression of cannon fodder, and that is just because it doesn't really grab me. It's too out there for me. I feel like the story... It's only 22 minutes, so the story is not really explained well enough.
It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't do anything.
Go anywhere. You're just kind of there in this weird city. I don't really understand what's happening in cannon fodder, and I don't like the style, the way that it's drawn. It just looks too weird.
It just feels like one of those. Because there is only so much that you can do or say in a short film, and short films tend to either be really really pretty or really really poignant, and sometimes both. But you know, that's just how they tend to go. And cannon fodder, having the budget that it did and the length, you know, it is pretty. It just doesn't have anything to say. It just doesn't. It's just weird.
This is one of those shows that was basically directed. Katsuhiro Otomo did this whole thing. I mean, it's the director, script, storyboard, and character design is all Katsuhiro Otomo, and art apparently. His name is just all over it. So it's kind of one of those types of shows. This is a Katsuhiro Otomo project, but it's far from Akira.
Well, he was. I think he was script writer on all of these.
So that may be true.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, Otomo wrote the script for all of these, and the cannon fodder is the only one he directed, which I actually think is the weakest one.
Probably. So the second one in the story, because you're not going to watch Memories for cannon fodder, I'll tell you that. Mm. The second one in the story is Stink Bomb, which is, yes, the script is also done by Katsuhiro Otomo, and this is a story of a guy. He swallows a pill that he thinks is cold medicine, but he ends up transforming himself into a biological weapon that emits smell that instantly knocks out everybody. So it's, I don't know. I kind of think he's.
It's fun. It's fun. It's supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, it is a comedy, and it's like massive confunk. Think about it. That's what it is. Awesome. It's a confunk movie.
That's kind of true. Confunk the movie.
This one's a lot longer than I remember. 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's long, and it's not. Again, not very good.
Not very good, but...
Well, I mean, because it's a comedy and it's not very funny. It's just, you're just like, all right, okay.
So this is like he, you know, they call him the military and the gas mask people and the SWAT team, and they try to corral him into a tunnel, and they're using giant fans to try to keep the smell away, and I don't know, it's just crazy. So it's about a bioweapon. He takes this pill and he generates massive confunk that wipes people out. So, much like a rave at an anime con.
Yep.
But the art style is completely different from cannon fodder, which is something that continues into the next story.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because each story has different animators, the character designs are different.
Yeah, the director's allowed to put together his own animation team and everything like that. But the guy who directed Stink Bomb... he's worked on a bunch of stuff, including Totoro. He was key animation on Totoro. He worked on Wicked City, Legend of the Galactic Heroes.
Wicked City, good God.
He was key animation on Ghost in the Shell and Ninja Scroll. I mean, he was key animation on Jinro, Spriggan. So a lot of these...
How does this guy end up on Totoro? Jinro, Spriggan...
it was kind of early
Ninja
in his
Scroll.
Career. I mean, before he worked on Totoro, it was Legend of the Galactic Heroes, Wicked City, Time Stranger, Neo Tokyo, The Dagger of Kamui, and Lensman.
Well, he's got like all those shows that you just named, except for Totoro and Galactic Heroes, is like massive gore.
Yeah, I mean, very he worked odd. On City Hunter and Urusei Yatsura. I mean, he's worked on a lot of like classic stuff.
Anyway, this one's okay. It's not. It's funny, but it's not really something that I think you need to watch. Really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of stupid. You don't really care about the characters.
Talk about the good one.
Yeah. So now that we've done the obligatory cover of those two, we are going to talk about Magnetic Rose, which is an anime that I have always included in my panel of best anime you've never seen or heard of, because it's just that good.
It's really good, and I think we can owe a lot of that to the script that was based on a story by Katsuhiro Otomo, but was written by Satoshi Kon. So, there's that. And we all know that Satoshi Kon is the shit.
Yeah, so you've got You've got Koji Morimoto directing it, Satoshi Kon's doing the script, you've got the character designs of Katsuhiro Otomo, you have an all-star cast of people working on this movie, which is 44 minutes. I always think it's longer than that, but maybe not. So,
music by Kano Yoko, or Yoko
Kano. Kano.
Yeah, music by Yoko Kano.
Well, the most memorable piece of music in it is Madam Butterfly, which is what I'm playing right now. But, so, you've got these people in space, and they're, I guess they're like garbage men or something. They're scavengers. They
junk collectors.
Junk collectors, basically.
Yeah. The idea is that, you know, junk in space is super dangerous. So
yeah.
I mean, the start of this, isn't it just that little tiny piece of space dust flying into that ship and like destroying?
That's
the
Planetess.
Ship? Oh yes,
thinking
it is,
of.
Isn't it?
I am. So something else. In this movie, they're just kind of chilling, and they get a distress call from an area that has a really powerful magnetic field. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, shit, you know, we can't go in there, we're never going to come out again, because it's like a ship graveyard, right? But they also know that if they don't help, they're going to get arrested, because it's illegal to ignore a distress call. So they go into this old, what turns out to be like a space station, that's shaped like a rose, and it turns out to be like the home in outer space of this woman who was an opera singer. And she played Madame Butterfly, which is why there's Madame Butterfly all through this movie. And which you should not be, sad about. Classic opera. So they go into the space station, and it's basically like it's a horror movie. One of the only true horror anime, I think, that I've seen. There aren't that many. I've said it before.
Not good ones.
So there's a lot of atmosphere in this movie. I mean, you're infiltrating this spooky like space station that's all dark, and you're kind of along for the ride with these people, and there's this entity inside the space station that kind of doesn't want them to leave and is always trying to preserve the youth of the woman, because she was this diva and never wanted her youth to fade. So rather than being on Earth and letting people see her youth decay as she gets older, she goes into the space station to live alone and surrounds herself with like these projections of herself when she's young and all these holographs, and tries to trap the soul, like the lives of these men inside her space station, and which is maybe the true magnetic force of the not only is there a magnetic field, but there's also the magnetism of her trying to keep these men in. And you find out that there's been a lot of men that have been lured into this trap, so she's kind of like a siren, I guess, in that way. But what else to say about this? The animation's amazing.
Beautiful.
I mean, it's just absurd how amazing it is for 1995, and it's very serious. Does a lot in 44 minutes. It's got really cool sci-fi gadgets and interesting themes of sci-fi in it. You have spacesuits and, you know, outer space everywhere. And at the same time, they even throw like some drama in there at the end, because the man who's trying to leave is remembering his daughter and his wife and all this stuff. And do you guys have any questions?
So what is the tie between all of these short movies? Is it characters specifically, or are there themes that are supposed to be the ties?
Good question.
I believe that this is Katsuhiro Otomo's project. Like this was his doing. I'm not sure what the theme was supposed to be, because if you just watch it, there doesn't seem to be a consistent theme through these short films.
You could say like maybe the connection is the characters, maybe the connection is some kind of genre or theme, maybe the connection is, you know, the art style or something. But in truth, all of those things are completely different amongst all three of the stories, and the only similarity between them is Katsuhiro Otomo is playing some major role in each of them. So
it's kind of hard to say. I think that maybe they were old ideas of Otomo's that he wanted to make into feature-length films or something, that just never got around to doing that, so he decided to throw them, you know, kind of at three filmmakers, or two other filmmakers, including himself, and and see what he could make of it. So that might be what it is. Memories might just refer to, you know, past ideas and things that he's had that he's kind of putting into one thing, but I'm really not sure.
Sounds very passion project-y.
Yeah, and you get that feeling from it. I mean, because all three of the shorts are beautiful. Like, they all look really good. I think Magnetic Rose looks the best of all of them, but I don't know. You can tell that it was kind of a passion project, probably his baby for a little while.
But Koji Morimoto has a huge resume, and I'm looking at it right here, and it's gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, his directing roles are sort of limited, but he's been involved in other ways in a lot of stuff.
I think all of his directing roles have been on anthology films. I think every single one of them, because he's got, let's see, because he's done a lot of back, like, behind-the-scenes type stuff.
He's been the producer for a lot of things.
Producer, key animation, stuff like that, but his directing credits are from things like Robot Carnival, which is...
And this guy looks crazy. Look at his picture.
Which is anthology.
Look at his picture.
Yeah, he's a nutcase.
He's crazy looking.
Robot Carnival, Nine Love Stories, Memories, of course, Eternal Family, which I don't think is an anthology film, The Animatrix, which is an anthology film, Digital Juice, Genius Party Beyond.
Interesting. He was the director for LeBron James's The Chamber of Fear commercial on TV.
What?
Yeah. Wow. That is
okay.
So he's been around.
LeBron. That's random.
Yeah, so, but certainly Magnetic Rose is the best of the what you have to see from this trilogy, and I mean, the atmosphere alone makes it worth watching. I mean, they infiltrate this base, and the first thing you see is, you know, you expect it to be like this decayed place, but in the end, it opens up into this grand, like, opera hall, and it just totally surprises you. It's just really wonderful. So, I think anybody should check it out, really. But we have to probably score this as a whole and not just as Magnetic Rose.
How are we going to score this as a whole? I mean, because if I could, maybe if I could score Magnetic Rose by itself, I'd probably give it a 4.5.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
But
then maybe perhaps we just give each of them a score and average it.
Oh, okay, that's fair. All right, so I would say, for me, I would say Magnetic Rose is, like I said, a 4.5. Let's see, Stink Bomb, I'm going to say is a 3. I mean, I liked it, but...
I give it a 2.5.
2.5 on that
one? Yeah.
And then Cannon Fodder, I'm going to say is a 2.5 for me.
I'd probably give it a 2. I didn't really like it at all.
Okay.
So you add that up, you divide it out, and that gives Memories a 3.
Okay.
So
unfortunately, because it does have a really, really great short in it. So
may I ask another question?
Sure. Oh, please do.
Let's see. So as very positive as you talked about Magnetic Rose, would it be possible for me to watch just that, or would you just say, go ahead and watch the other ones, or you'll be fine watching just Magnetic Rose?
Actually, I recommend you just watch Magnetic Rose.
Okay.
I mean...
Yeah, I would, too. The other two you don't need to see.
It's a very worthwhile 45 minutes, and unlike a lot of anime, they kind of claim to have horror themes, but they're really just, like, you know, slice-of-life school shows, or, you know, ghost... Like, Ghost Hunt is not a horror show. Not really, you know? This is horror, and that's what it is.
All right.
So it's like you're getting like the suspense and the horror of it. Watch it in the dark, you know, whatever. So I definitely recommend just watching. The other two aren't worth it.
No, okay. Not worth your time.
So you can save the other,
and they're a slog too. Like both of them to get through. Like even though I kind of liked Stink Bomb, because it's a little funny, you know.
It is.
Yeah, that both of them are like 45 minutes long. So
okay,
so. Okay, well, J-Ro, thank you for joining us
Thank you, sir. It was great.
On our Valentine's Day episode. So
yeah, so pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You want to tell us one more time where people can find you?
Let's see. The Anavision podcast, you can find that at anavision.org. And Metanorn's podcast, Metaverse, can be found at metanorn.net.
Hey, very cool.
Thank you very much, J-Ro, for joining us. You've been with us for a long time. We appreciate the, you know, you being a fan, and we're a fan of you, so keep it real, I guess. So you can find us at www.aaapodcast.com. Chiaki's always doing new stuff on the site. She's good at keeping things fresh, so come check it out over there. We're also on iTunes, where you can subscribe, Facebook, Twitter, and live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time from Japan on ustream.tv. So you can come by and watch us there. We'll, you know, come by and talk with us. It's always fun. So the closing theme for you tonight is Recall from the anime Amnesia by the artist Ray. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye, guys.
My mind.